And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation, the most beautiful one. That's this one, Alabama. And I'm talking about this show goes like way on down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. All right, so I'll tell you what, real quick, I got one text message that's very interesting. Joe from Owens Crossroads says, here's a secret. Tell me if you knew this, Boomer. He says, secret to always having your checked bags arrive on whatever plane you end up on, put your pistol in it, and declare it, and it gets hand-carried by airline personnel. I don't know.
I've never tried that.
I feel like it gets hand-stolen by airline personnel at that point. That's very interesting. Real quick, I got a call on line one. Brian, Huntsville. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Doing okay. And it sounds like you might get that gun confiscated, like if you have a tube of toothpaste that has more ounces than allowed.
Yeah. Watch that shampoo, man. It could be dangerous.
But real quick, actually, the ultimate luggage misplaced that I know of was back in 87 when the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment just got their Bradley, and so we shipped everything out, my M1A1 and all the Bradleys, to Fort Irwin, California.
Yeah.
We got through maneuvers and everything, and it's supposed to be shipped back, and we all got back to base, and we sat there 2 weeks while they tried to find out where our tracks were, and they ended up being in Michigan.
How did you lose an entire regiment's worth of armored fighting vehicles?
I didn't lose it, sir, and I never found out how.
They wound up in Michigan?
In Michigan, and they eventually got back to us. Until then, we were very busy cleaning barracks and doing things like that.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it's like you're painting rocks and doing police call, but. That's a story.
Yep.
All right. My son was in 3rd Cav, so I'll have to ask him about that. All right. See you, Brian. Appreciate you, man. Wow. Okay. And then Tony from Piedmont just texted in and says, took a train from Decatur, Alabama in 68 to Tucson, Arizona. 2 days, one way. Very pleasant. All right. Good enough. Hey, I'm going to jump right in now. Spare the rod. I mean, everybody's heard it. Spare the rod. Spoil the child. And it's not wrong. And by the way, this is not like saying the answer is always a violent punishment. That's not what we're saying here at all. But the idea is this. If you have a society that wants law and order, you will not have law and order unless you have teeth within the laws that helps bring the order. Does that make sense? You're not going to have acquiescence on the part of bad guys. Bad guys are notorious for making bad decisions. Bad guys do not typically go, yeah, you know, I don't know what I was thinking. I'll be glad to show up without having to pay bail at my court hearing. Yeah, I don't know how that happened. I'm so apologetic and remorseful that I will acquiesce now and just do whatever you want me to do. Yeah, if you release me back on the streets as a, you know, perpetual felon, I promise I will only do small crimes for at least a little while. I mean, this is what we're seeing right now is the result of a constant trend towards going soft on crime. I'll never forget. So as a state senator, when I was brand spanking new, I mean, I think may have been one of my first ever judiciary hearings because I was on the Senate Judiciary Committee, vice chair of that. And I'll never forget. Sue Bell Cobb used to be the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, Democrat. She didn't stay in office much longer. She actually resigned from the Supreme Court in Alabama not long after the Republicans took the legislature. I'm not sure how to explain all that, but the reality is she kind of got in my face one day. We were passing laws that Democrats wouldn't pass, and then all of a sudden Republicans had a supermajority, so we came in and began to clean house. And I don't remember what the law was. I just know that we passed something out of committee, and Chief Justice Cobb came up to me and said, something like, what are you going to do when you go back to your district? How are you going to explain to people that you've chosen to go ahead and pass these draconian laws? And I said, and she's like pointing her finger in my face. And I said, well, first of all, Madam Chief Justice, what are you going to come to my constituents and say about why you wanted us to be soft on crime? Okay, the conversation pretty much ended right there. But that perpetual desire to see defund the police, soft on crime, is ruining cities around our nation. Probably the biggest case in point right now, San Francisco. So there's a video that came out. This is what sparked me doing this. I don't know if y'all saw it. Some of y'all may have seen it. It was a TikTok video. I saw it on Twitter because, you know, things cross over. I don't do TikTok. But I saw this video, and there's this young lady who was so upset. I mean, she kept grabbing her face like she was so upset. And she even said, I don't even know why I'm doing this video right now. I just need to say this to y'all. Anyway, the bottom line is this. The article I picked up off Red State says it's a young millennial white woman living in San Francisco. She tells a story on TikTok about an encounter that she had in her city with a man and then describes the environment in her city currently. And she's frantic on the video and clearly distressed. She starts off by saying, if you live in San Francisco, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, which, by the way, for her to say that is a clear indication that she does not believe that what happened to her was an isolated incident. She went on to say that she was literally out getting groceries in broad daylight in front of a whole group of people who were walking past, and this man walking past her said, move over, you stupid blank, and spit in her face. And she responded angrily and said, did you just spit in my face? To which point he said, move now or I'll, and he said some foul things to her. And she notes that he did this in front of a whole group of people who did and said nothing. And she proceeds to say she does not even feel safe in her city anymore. She only goes out in the daytime and even then doesn't like it. She never goes out at night. And she says, you know, if you live here, do you not see this? Or something like that. Well, the guy writing the article says, I have to ask what it was she expected, because San Francisco has been ruled by leftists now for how long? And the city has gone absolutely bananas. Like, for instance, if someone breaks into your car, it's not considered a crime. They have open-air drug dens. They have recently just passed something called the Safe Schools and Neighborhoods Act. What is that? It means it reduces felonies to misdemeanors and allows for early release for violent and sex offenders. Why does that make it Safe Schools and Neighborhoods Act? Goes on to say crime rules and taxes skyrocket and corruption flourishes and chaos descends and the whole place goes to hell. And San Francisco is a tragic story. It points out, too, and I used to want to go see San Francisco. I have no desire to go see San Francisco right now. But it says right now, if it were stripped of the authoritarian grip of its current leadership, its streets were cleaned up and law and order returned, San Francisco would be a crown jewel in the United States. And it would. It would. The city by the bay. How many songs have been written about it? But that right there, y'all, is literally that one video of that young lady. I mean, it broke my heart to watch this thing. I mean, she's literally beside herself talking about just walking down the street getting groceries and has a guy spit in her face and cuss her out. And people walking by saw it and said and did nothing because no one wanted to get involved, because they all know what happens. If they try to get involved, then they're in the middle of it. But this is what's going to wind up being the course of events in any society that decides that going soft on crime and you know, advancing the cause of the criminal as opposed to the victim, this is where it's going to go every single time. Show me a society that decided to go soft on crime in history, and show me if that society is still here. I dare you. You're not going to find, human nature does not go tread lightly in areas where there is no teeth in the law. Now, I'm not trying to be draconian. I'm not trying to say, let's make sure we get them, you know, lock them all up, let God sort them out. That's not what I'm saying. But if you go so soft that they have no expectation of having to pay a penalty, that's what the law is. The law is the order, and the punishment is part of what keeps the order because of the deterrent effect of the punishment. And if there is no deterrent effect, then the cost of doing business, if you will, for the criminal is just to get a slap on the wrist. They know it. Misdemeanors mean nothing. If you already don't care about people, then you don't care whether you have a misdemeanor in your record, because you just don't care about much in general. I'll never forget one time I had somebody contact me and say, hey, I think we got an issue going on in our area. What do you think? If we charge him with a misdemeanor, I said, I wouldn't do it. Why do you say that? Because that's the cost of doing business for them. It just is. But it's happening everywhere, and I'm telling you right now, it's really happening with our kids. Now, we get back from this break. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back from this break, I'm going to jump on this because maybe y'all saw the video. Let's talk about another video. That young lady, I mean, old boy who spit on her, is lucky that she didn't have some kind of martial arts training because he would have deserved it. But how about the dude in California, Stockton, California, the guy wearing the turban, he was a Sikh, who decided he had had enough of being robbed and just took the stick out and wailed on the guy. If you haven't seen it, it's worth looking at. We'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, making common sense a superpower. All right, so we're back in number one of the Triple Dipper, Spare the Rod. And so I think perhaps one of my favorite videos, it's just making the rounds. It's still making the rounds. You may have seen it in Stockton, California. There was a 7-Eleven. Boomer, I don't know if you saw this too. I know you did because we were watching it.
Yes.
So in Stockton, California, there's a video of a guy who is wearing I think it's a t-shirt that he's trying to wear like a ski mask. And he's just sweeping cigarettes off shelves. And I think he actually got back behind the counter where the staff works. And he was loading a trash can up with, he was just stealing stuff.
Just everything, right? He was just kind of pulling it off the shelves.
Yeah, and he was kept saying, you can't do nothing. You can't do nothing to me. You can't do nothing.
Oh, but he got a whooping.
Got more than a whooping.
Oh, man.
This was an old-fashioned public caning is what this was. So if you didn't see it, it's gone viral. I would look at it. Just go to your phone and just Google beating, what would you call this thing? A beating in 7-Eleven store. Yeah. It's going to come up, man.
Yeah, 7-Eleven beating or, you know, shoplifter beating. I don't know.
If you're tired of crime in the streets, this one will it will bring joy to your heart. It's an interesting story. But the guy who had the cane is being charged criminally now.
Really?
I'm looking at the
criminally.
Article. Red State. As Red State reported, a Sikh, he's wearing the black turban and all this, a Sikh convenience store owner turned the tables on a shoplifter as he attempted to get away with thousands of dollars of stolen merchandise. The shoplifter quickly learned that, there wasn't nothing you could do as he was tackled to the ground and beaten with a rod. I don't mean like a little bit, y'all. I mean like oh boy, had a life-changing experience. Let's go ahead and like a lot of life-changing experience, if you know what I'm saying. It says many California cities have no desire to actually enforce the laws against people who steal from business owners and put them in financial peril, but they are interested in enforcing the battery laws involving the protection of said businesses. And that's the point, is we're looking at the guy right now facing possible criminal charges.
Okay, I got a question. All right. I'm going to put lawyer Phil hat on.
Oh, Lord. All right.
You ready?
Yeah.
All right. Isn't there a doctrine, castle something doctrine?
Castle doctrine?
About like your home. You know, you can.
Alabama often calls it your stand your ground law.
Yeah, stand your ground law. You know, you are protecting your home, your family inside your home. Is there something similar to that with businesses as well?
Yes, and it depends on the locale. California probably doesn't have it. I don't know.
California doesn't have anything.
The law of California is like the dark side of the moon. I mean, if I were to walk into court today and say, Your Honor, I have case precedent I'd like to cite from the Ninth Circuit out in California, he would say, get out of my courtroom. Do push-ups first. I mean, that's and I would deserve it. But I don't know what the laws in California are. I'd have to look. But yeah, most states have something they call a castle doctrine, which is, you know, your home is your castle.
Right.
And a lot of times it extends based on your state law to your car and to your business. And you have a right to a sense of security and privacy and the ability to stand your own ground in defense of your life.
Right. So probably not beating a guy to a pulp in your business would define as standing your ground. But if they were beating him out, pushing him out the door, maybe.
Like if he got the cane, threatened the guy, whacked him once or twice as he was trying to steal more cigarettes and the guy left, probably non-issue. Right. They would probably say, well, thank you for using non-lethal force. I mean,
right.
He could have brought out a firearm and his hat at it, but he didn't. He brought out a stick.
It was a stick.
It was a sizable stick.
Right. It was fairly large.
It was quite a stick. It was a stick that looked like it had a purpose. Like it.
A purposeful stick.
They need to go ahead and like write Excalibur down the side of the stick or something. But yeah, I don't know that this would qualify.
Right. But good for him. I mean, for standing, like telling the guy, he was just fed up with it. I mean, how many times has this guy been robbed?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's in the article, I believe.
He probably just had enough.
I read more than one article that said that this particular store had been robbed so many times they were just sick of it.
Well, what, in San Francisco or in California in general, how many businesses have shut down because of the stealing and the rampages on these businesses and such?
Retail theft's out of control.
So he's trying to survive, and he can't survive. I mean, I get it. Don't beat the guy to a pulp, but like, especially on social media.
Once he got started, you know, it was like
I'm going for it.
Like some kind of electric toy. It just kept going. Katanka, 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 katanka.
The monkeys that just keep going.
Banging the cymbals. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, so the bottom line is I don't. So here's the thing. And this article even makes that same point now that you brought it up, Boom. That the shoplifter may have been treated to excessive force. Maybe.
Maybe.
And then the article says, and I agree, as a purely legal matter, that might be true. Purely legal matter. But the point here, though, is this is a store that had been robbed so many times. In fact, I guess it's not in this article. I've read more than one. And I think it was this store that had been robbed like 10 times in the previous 2 weeks. And you got to look at it and think, okay, at what point, though, does local leadership, law enforcement maybe, but probably more likely the local leadership that restricts the hands of law enforcement, at what point does local leadership go, you know, we set the stage for this. We own this. Oh, boy, got beaten with a rod, like beaten with like a lot, with a rod, beaten with a rod. And perhaps there's some ownership that should be taken by local leadership who have set the stage for this by being so soft on crime that the people don't know what else to do. Should the guy with the turban and the stick, should he just go home and say, yep, had another bad day, honey, lost some more thousands of dollars of inventory. Just another bad day. It's going to come out of my check. Yep, I chose to do nothing because that's the kind of person you know me to be. I'll just do nothing. No. I mean, at some point, the local leadership has to recognize they have set the stage for this, y'all. And it's not just there. I'll tell you what, we're going to go take a break here in just a minute. But when we get back from this break, I'm going to tell you, this is extending now. It's not just the homelessness. It's not just the drug dens. It's not just the idea that, you know, adults feel a sense of empowerment and enablement to do what they want to do without, you know, any form of retribution. It's really being taught to our kids. It's being taught to our kids right now. I'll be honest with you. I know that liberals' heads will explode if they hear this, but the broken windows theory works. And broken windows theory, if you're not familiar, says if you let the small things go, like kids throwing rocks through a window, if you let the small things go, guess what? More small things happen and they magnify into bigger things, and bigger things magnify into even bigger things, and pretty soon you got lawlessness, all because you chose not to enforce the broken windows. I got more. We're in Spare the Rod, number one, Triple Dipper. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Welcome to hour number two on Tuesday, which we have been told is what we should call Monday hangover. Okay. Anyway, I got plenty of text messages. I'm going to jump on a few of them just to sort of keep this thing moving here. Otherwise, I get so far behind, I can't even catch up. I got Ron from Brownsboro. He says, the legal system has followed the behavior of families in America. Parents don't love or respect their children. This is exemplified by the parents' theft of the child's consequences for bad behavior. When a society steals the consequences from criminals, that society communicates that the criminal is worthless, and so are the people they've wronged. That's interesting. That's an interesting way of putting it. A just God, will respect and hold accountable those who do evil and those who approve of them. God holds us in high regard and will not steal the consequences of hell for the unrighteousness. I tell my daughter, love does not exist without consequences. That's a very long text, thank you, Ron, but that's a good text, and it's solid. You're right, there have to be consequences for a society to actually care about itself. You can't say you truly care if you're not willing to love them enough to make them mad at you, and that's just the way it is. And by the way, there have to be consequences, otherwise there is no deterrent. Brian from Huntsville, defund the police becomes a DIY project. Yes. Adam from Decatur, it's only excessive force if he's dead at the end of the caning. Okay. Well, old boy was crying and sobbing and asking for mercy, so apparently it wasn't excessive then. Tony from Piedmont, nothing like a good rod, stick, or a wooden spoon that Mama used to wear me out with. So, yeah. Teresa from Town Creek, the man on the video is a hero. They said if he is charged, there will be a GoFundMe account set up for him. I guarantee you there will.
Oh, absolutely.
You know they will.
Yes.
We may have to contribute to it. Just saying. We actually did. You know that we did contribute to the GoFundMe. Right Side Radio did contribute to the GoFundMe for that that ex-Marine who is up on charges in New York for stopping the guy on the subway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stopped him. The guy did die, but the guy was threatening other people. I mean, where's that case right now, by the way?
Right.
John from Huntsville says, Phil, I know this is a serious topic, but for some reason when you said the word spare the rod, I thought to myself, man, I really want to grab my rod and reel, go do some bass fishing. Wonder if Boomer wants to go bass fishing, he says.
Oh, I love some bass fishing.
Get you some. JT and
Lacey Springs. He sent a meme, and it's awesome.
Is it? Oh, okay. He sent a meme. It's a picture of John Wayne.
Yes.
It's already going to be good, I can tell. He says, the problem is simple. Kids today don't know the fear of hearing leather being rapidly pulled through seven Wrangler belt loops.
But you gotta have to say it like John Wayne would.
Okay,
let me say it. Problem right. Simple.
Yeah. Well, Pilgrim, the problem is simple. Kids today don't know the fear of hearing leather being rapidly pulled through seven Wrangler belt loops.
Yes. There you go.
Listen,
that was better.
It does pop, too.
Oh, man.
Coming out.
Terrifying.
Listen. My dad, and by the way, my dad didn't beat us, not at all, but he also, that belt could come out of those loops faster than, you know,
man,
than Superman could put his cape on. I mean, I was like, swat-a-bow.
I remember the belt coming out of the loops. I also remember the belt, you know, you put it in a little thing and you snap it.
Oh, yeah.
He did that just to terrify me. I'm still terrified.
There were times my dad barely had to move his hand towards his belt buckle. That's all he had to do.
Just close to it.
He'd just look at me, and that one hand would go towards the belt buckle. No, Dad. No.
No.
Daddy, I'm sorry. I apologize to him. I won't do it no more. Daddy. Oh.
You're right, son.
Yeah. Go apologize to your brother. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. What happened again? Yeah, yeah. Cody from Huntsville says, unfortunately, I heard the news. The DA is going after the guy in the turban. Yeah, that's what we hear too, brother. Brian from Decatur just says, My only issue with the caning is that the person that recorded it, out of sight, out of mind, it would have been beneficial if the shop owner had been, you know. Anyway, the bottom line, what he's saying is, yeah, some guy stood there doing nothing, filming it, going, wow, wow. Just like, dude, that's your job here is to film? And at some point, though, too, old boy with the turban wore himself out. He turned around, looked back at the camera, like, oh. And like he just run a marathon. Ooh,
he was tired.
I got one or two more good ones in me. Hang on. Penny from Athens says, the longest walk in the world was when my mama said, go get me a switch. That's the worst.
Oh.
Now, I will say this. I never had to walk and get my own switch. But I watched my mom make my brother cut his own switch, and I just stood back and took note. Log that one away for future reference. Don't tell me you can't learn from your peers and your siblings having to cut their own switch. Spare the rod. That's number one here on the Triple Dipper. I'm still going. You ready? So here's the thing. Came off of Daily Caller. Daily Caller has a story that came out yesterday. It's exclusive to them. A school district, and this is in Poway, California. Why is it always California? It's not always California. Anyway, school district puts misbehaving kids through diversity training instead of suspending them. Boomer, were you that kid? Were you the one? Did you occasionally, I mean, you went to school at the same school where your mom worked.
Yeah.
Oh, that made it worse.
It did.
Did your mom ever have to leave her class and come down the hall?
Only once.
Really?
For me.
That's all it took?
Only once. Because it was down the hall. She had a nice stern talk.
Yeah.
It said, just wait till your father gets home. And I said, yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, so you weren't the guy they would send to restorative justice training for diversity classes.
No.
Okay.
No, I was not.
I don't think that would have took.
No.
I'm pretty sure I'd have been the guy who'd been sitting there going, you know, making paper airplanes and waiting for it to be over. So California School District encouraged its staff during a September 2022 in workshop to send the misbehaving students to diversity, empathy, and implicit bias training instead of suspending or expelling them. Restorative justice, they call it. The staff training, which promotes an Anti-Defamation League education program. By the way, that Anti-Defamation League material is in the Huntsville City Schools. I've reported on that multiple times. Offered alternative punishments to suspending students, including courses on care and hate behavior, as well as lessons on empathy and diversity. Counterproductive, because it demonizes and shames participants, they say. All I know is this. It helps them discuss things like anti-blackness, anti-Hispanic and Latinx issues, anti-LGBTQ plus issues. Doesn't say anything about stop doing the bad stuff. It helps them to understand why perhaps they feel that way, and maybe this is not the behavior that you should exhibit. That would not have worked with me. At all. That would not have worked with me, not like a bit.
Not one bit for me.
I mean,
I would have been back there coloring,
You
know, doodling whoever's teaching it.
It'd have been a lark. It'd have been a day out of math class for me. I'd have been like, whatever, yeah. Can I do this again tomorrow?
How many pencils can I get stuck up in the ceiling? I don't know.
Oh, you did that too?
Yeah, I got in trouble for that too.
Yeah, my favorite one was in the cafeteria when they used to serve butter, you know, butter pads.
Yeah.
And you warm them up over something, and then you put it on your belt, and you go, snap, and the butter sticks to the ceiling.
We never had butter pads. That's probably why.
They got rid of our butter pads, and that's probably why. Half the cafeteria was lined with butter pads. I was that kid. The program is using for students in place of punishment aims to teach students empathy and understanding, as well as promote restorative justice principles in a 5-hour course. Okay, that might be torture. By the way, it also ends with a reading assignment called A Starbucks Arrest Shows How Black Americans Are Robbed of Their Power. This is in a public school system. And this is the problem, folks. If you have that level of ridiculousness, that level of a lack of deterrence, that level of a lack of concern or care for the victims of whatever the behavior was, then you're going to get more of it. You're going to get more. If you think for a second that sending the knucklehead 12-year-old who just, you know, did something in class that he shouldn't have done that was heinous enough to where he could have been expelled for it before, if you think that because he beat up on little Susie in class that you send him to empathy training, that it's going to change his day, you're wrong. And that's what's happening too often. And those are the kids that are going to grow up to be the ones who come into the grocery store and think they can steal all the cigarettes and have to get caned by the guy in the turban. That's what's going to happen. We're going to take a break right now. I'm going to come back and wrap this up. It's bad enough when you've got this going on. It's even worse when you have local leadership refusing to acknowledge that it's even there. Chicago, Mayor Johnson, don't you dare call those kids a mob. Really? The frick are they? We'll talk about it when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. All right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, so finishing this up, spare the rod. If you are a society that spares the rod, and I'm not talking about being overly punitive. I am not talking about, you know, profiling and making people miserable because you got power, but they always try to put it off on, well, this is a racial issue, and you have now unjustly, you know, come against one racial demographic. No, if they're breaking the law, that's the point. Breaking the law, the law can be equally applied. If you got a problem with equal application, then go deal with that, but don't start softening the laws and making it so there's no application. Got a situation going on. Chicago is seeing a level of lawlessness that rivals San Francisco right now, but it's a different style. So you look at San Francisco, and what we appear to have is like the degradation of society. You have something that is just like decayed to the point of being like post-apocalyptic. Whereas what's going on in Chicago feels like violence fueled by, you know, sort of a mob mentality. Oh, wait, don't call them that. Why? Chicago mayor, the new liberal mayor, the guy who used to work for the teachers union full time, what's his name? Johnson. Mayor Johnson. He has taken serious issue with the very idea that the press would ask him a question and use the word mob. I saw this very condescending video, like he was talking to kindergartners. That's not appropriate. That's not appropriate. What? That's not appropriate, the newly minted mayor said, according to the New York Post. I saw it happened just 3 days ago. He says, we're not talking about mob actions. I didn't say that. These are large gatherings. For the love! These are large gatherings. This is the mayor of Chicago. Do you wonder why they laughingly continue to do this stuff, mayor? Because people like you are in charge, and you don't even want to call them a lawless mob. It says, hundreds of rioters flooded Chicago's South Loop last Sunday. Hundreds of teens. It was like a flash mob. Teens took over the area for the second time in just a few days, and they looted a local convenience store. Looted it. The Chicago Police Department charged 40 people with disorderly contact. 32 of them were teenagers. Misdemeanors, fighting, damaging vehicles, smashing a window, looting a nearby store. But the mayor does not want to call them anything but a large gathering. He takes issue with that. This is not to obfuscate what has happened, he says. We have to be careful, though, when we use language to describe certain behavior. There's a history in this city. Refer to children as baby Al Capones is not appropriate. I got news, Mayor. You have a lawless city. Total crime in the Windy City up 36% this year. Up 36% this year. Motor vehicle thefts up by a whopping 116%. 116% increase in motor vehicle theft. And they've got crowds doing this on a regular basis. Here's another one. You ready? This happened just a few weeks ago in June. The article here is on ABC News 7 out of Chicago. A flash mob, oh, there's that word. A flash mob at a Southside gas station drew hundreds of young people and a large police presence. Video from the scene showed people jumping on cars at a BP gas station at 31st Street and Michigan Avenue. An 18-year-old woman was struck by a vehicle. A gas station attendant said scores of teenagers flooded into the station, ransacked the store, and even broke glass above the door. Nearby neighbors said where the teen takeover happened, these destructive gatherings are embarrassing for the city. These are citizens who, folks, you got to listen. If you're fed up, who is it you're voting for? If you're fed up, then maybe, just maybe, it's time for a change in leadership. Neighbors are saying things like, we used to have a sense of pride. Now we got young people twerking in the middle of the street, wilding out, cursing, running up and down, jumping on cars, doing ridiculous things. One lady said, we got to put God first and we got to pray. Just try to teach them right from wrong. If you get into trouble, I'm not going to get you out of trouble. Listen, this is happening too often. And yet that same state, Illinois, just passed, and it was upheld by their Supreme Court just a few weeks ago, cash-free bail. What does that mean? That means you're an awful individual, you just committed a crime, and we're going to let you out on your own recognizance. No bail necessary. The police right now are bracing themselves because this goes into effect in a couple weeks. And they really believe that what's about to happen is the crime that I just quoted statistics for is going to spike even further. So the reality is this, and I'll end it with this. Got a piece here that was written in the Hill magazine last year, by a former congressman who spent 20 years as a federal prosecutor. And he says this, those who eventually become hardened criminals do not begin by committing felonies. Allowing property crimes and misdemeanors to go unchecked breeds a culture of permissiveness, leading perpetrators to eventually commit more serious offenses. In major cities, there continues to be large-scale, organized, smash-and-grab-style thefts. Crimes like those have to be taken seriously. Because their truth is, violent criminals are emboldened by soft-on-crime policies and a lack of consequences. And that's where we are, folks. We are losing some of our most beautiful cities. We're losing them. They're saying right now, some of the articles actually use the phrase about San Francisco, that the city itself is in a death spiral. They're not sure it can pull it out in time to save it. I'm worried that we're going to wind up seeing, and I don't want to see this. I never want to see the government have to take over. But at some point, you have to look at it and go, when do we just say it's time to send in the National Guard? If you're not familiar with Phoenix City, Alabama, when we come back, I'll wrap up by telling you the story of what happened in Phoenix City, Alabama. The Phoenix City disturbance. It's. Let's bring it all home. Phoenix City, Alabama is the legend of what happens when you allow lawlessness to go on unabated. And it's, folks, it's not a little bit. It's a big hairy deal. At some point, you look at it and go, where do we draw the line? And how do we get it back? And why did it get this bad? Well, you know what? We know why it got this bad. Because you went soft. But if you spare the rod, listen, this is where we end up. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful, beautiful state in the nation. That'd be this one, Alabama. I'm telling you, this show goes like way on down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, thrown in, all for just for good measure. Hey, all right. So I'm going to wrap this up. This was a spur of the moment. This was I just grabbed this out of the Rolodex in my head. But as we're looking at the idea of what happens when you have lawlessness, when you have anarchy, when you have a community that no longer could trust that it is safe to walk their own streets. You know, I started this whole segment here with the young lady in San Francisco who posted a video on her social media where she talked about how she was just walking back from the store with her groceries and a guy cussed her and spit in her face for no reason. And she said, "I don't even like to go out in my own city anymore." And she started off by saying, "If you live in San Francisco, you know what I'm about to talk about." Well, that's because it's not just an isolated incident. Well, so probably the epitome of what can happen when a community loses control is based in Alabama history. Boomer, you ever heard of the, sometimes I refer to it as the Phoenix City disturbance?
I don't believe I have.
You know, Phoenix City is down there near Columbus, Georgia, right. on this mm-hmm. side of the line. Okay. Just south of Auburn, that area. All right. Phoenix City, Alabama, 1954. The city was known as Sin City, USA. I mean, that was a nickname. Sin City, USA was Phoenix City, Alabama. It was a place that it was so bad, and it was right across the river from Fort Benning, Georgia, that General Patton, when he was stationed there, he said he wanted to take his tanks and flatten that city because every weekend some of his troops would go across the line, they'd get in trouble, they'd get beat up, they'd get robbed. You know, it was massive corruption. The local law enforcement was on the take. The mayor was on the take. The city council was like a non-existent thing. The local backroom gambling halls, prostitution. It was complete anarchy. This was the Wild West. This was like going into Old Tombstone or something in the Wild West. Phoenix City, Alabama was literally known as Sin City, USA. That was his nickname. 1954, a guy named Albert Patterson. He was a lawyer in Phoenix City, a good man who was tired of seeing things the way they were. He decided he was going to run for Attorney General of the state of Alabama. Running for Attorney General as a Democrat, that was the party at the time, but running for Attorney General as a Democrat, his promise was he was going to clean up Sin City, USA. It was an embarrassment to the rest of the state. But yet, the legislature and the governor were doing nothing about it. It was just one of those things that, like, you roll your eyes, don't go there on the weekend, you know, that kind of thing. Albert Patterson was tired of his community looking like this. Albert Patterson says he's going to run for Attorney General. Albert Patterson actually made the nomination for his state party, which meant that he was very likely going to be the next Attorney General. And then he was assassinated on the streets of Phoenix City right outside his office. And at that point, no one could ignore it anymore. And the governor decided, that's enough of that. And the governor issued an order, and General Walter J. Crack Hanna, a hero of World War II. What a nickname, Crack. If you're going to be an Army general, I want my nickname to be Crack. But anyway, Crack Hanna of the Alabama National Guard rolled into town with a very large contingent of armed National Guardsmen, and they took over the town. They did. They took over the town, declared martial law, and dethroned the local law enforcement. There are still today cases, as a lawyer, I saw this. I've seen it somewhere when I was looking up something else. There are cases right now where people were appealing their criminal prosecutions because they were convicted in a military tribunal as opposed to a criminal court, you know, of the typical justice system. And this went on for the better part of a year. And they cleaned house and it became legendary. For a long time, back in the old school National Guard days, there were certain guys who'd been around a long time that still had what they called the Phoenix City Disturbance ribbon on their uniform. It's one of the only times since Reconstruction that American troops actually declared martial law on American soil and actually came in and enforced the law. It was that bad.
I mean, that's pretty remarkable that that happened. Why isn't that taught more often? Because I did not know this.
There are places where it's still taught. Posse Comitatus, the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878,
yeah.
is the law that says that federal troops cannot be used to enforce laws, you know, across the United. Now there's exceptions, life, limb, or property, you know, responding to emergencies, that kind of thing, but in this case, That's why it was National Guard, because National Guard's in a different category. They're under state orders.
Mm.
They're under Title 32 of the U.S. Code, whereas the active duty is under Title 10. So the governor can say, you go over there and take over that town. It was that bad. So I'm not saying that I want San Francisco to go down that road.
Wow.
But at some point, you have to look at it and go, this is why, by the way, this is why we have states right now sending the National Guard to the southern border. Because the federal is not getting it, and local law enforcement can't handle it.
Wow.
And so what I don't want to see, this should be a lesson to the world. The Phoenix City disturbance should be the lesson to the world that if you let it go too far, then in order to save life, limb, and property, you may see an option that's taken off the table of trying to do it yourself.
And you said the governor has to do that, correct?
In that case, yes. The National Guard can only be ordered in by the governor unless they're federalized by the U.S.
So
by the U.S. government.
If this was happening in California, Newsom would have to do that. But if he was to do that, would everybody look at him saying, then you're going back on everything you just
said? Well, you know what? It's funny you say that. Hang on a second. I got to look back up. During the next break, I do believe that Governor Newsom may have actually sent the National Guard to either San Francisco or San Diego to assist with something to do with law enforcement.
Hmm.
I need to look that up. I'd forgotten this. Hang on.
You
just brought in a whole new... But yeah, when people start dying, when the guy who just got nominated to be probably the next attorney general in the state of Alabama gets assassinated on the streets of a city where they thumb the nose at the law.
Wow.
And the people live in fear. It was that bad. And so, yeah. The Phoenix City disturbance is a lesson often taught in conjunction with, you know, like law schools about posse comitatus. They study it all over the nation. Look it up, Phoenix City. There was actually a movie made about it. In fact, you know what? Mike from Huntsville just texted in, same thing. He said the Phoenix City movie was on TMC recently. Yeah, Mike, thanks for that. I appreciate it. Okay, listen, I tell you what, do. I'm going to go ahead and say, let's take a break about 2 minutes earlier than usual, boom shakalaka, as he looks at me like, I wasn't ready for that. I'm calling it, boom. I'm calling it. We're going to take a break about 2 minutes earlier than usual so I can come back and start the next section or take a call or three. If you want to call in or text in, the number is always the same. That's 833-687-4448. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, making common sense a superpower. Hey, by the way, during the break, you hear the ads being played. That's because Right Side Radio, we are a standalone business, and part of how we support ourselves as a business is by selling ads. So, yeah, I mean, if you're listening to this show and you think, man, those guys got it going on, they think and act and speak and talk the way I am, and you want to align your business with this show, we'd love to have you on the team. So, here's the way that works. You don't call the station, you call us. You go to our website, rightsideradio.org, that's rightsideradio.org, and you send us a message on the advertising and contact tab. That's all you got to do. Send us a message. We will jump back on it real quick, get in touch with you. If you want to advertise on Right Side Radio and support this program, we would love to have you on the team. Just give us a call. We'll take care of it. Going to the lines real quick. I see on line one, Jeff from Indiana. Hey, brother, how you doing?
Doing great, Phil.
Good. Where you at right now?
I got into Tennessee here, so I'm heading north, man.
All right, brother. Be careful. Nashville's coming.
Oh, well, that's 70 miles away, so hopefully they'll be through fighting it out by the time I get there.
Well, good enough. What's on your mind today?
Hey, let me pick that lawyer brain of yours a minute here. Now, like with the George Floyd case yesterday we touched on. The one cop was sentenced to 4 years, I think, in prison because of he didn't take out the cop who was killing George Floyd.
Yeah.
So he was negligent, I guess. I think he was charged with, accessory to manslaughter. Now, if they can do something like that, and all he was doing was holding the crowd back. I mean, he was there, but he didn't have no hands on him or anything else. But they still found him criminally negligent. Why can't any place where we have this cashless bail and everything, if somebody is let out of prison that they know is a dangerous criminal and goes out and repeats, criminal activity and hurts somebody, kills somebody, steals something, why can you not hold the people who let him go responsible for his actions?
I think to some degree you can, and I say that very loosely. It depends on your venue. There's going to be times, though, the majority of functions of government are protected by some form of discretionary function immunity. And what that means is if they got sued every time somebody didn't like what they said or did as a politician or as a DA or whatever, then nobody could get anything done and there'd be no money left in the public coffer to, pave roads with or whatever. So there's got to have some level of discretion. But then when you look at the abuse of discretion, that's when you get into it. And if you're seeing somebody who is choosing to openly say, I will not enforce these laws, then I think they should face civil prosecution. And I think at the same time, the guy, and I don't know all the circumstances with the guy who just got sentenced. I did see a headline on that. If he was standing idly by doing nothing and he had been trained on what to do and chose to act in contravention to his training, that he probably should have been liable. But at the same time, you look at it and go, it took you this long to figure it out. I think they're still looking for someone to pay. That's what I think.
But he was held criminally negligent. I mean, he's in jail for it. It's not civil. I mean, just like if a bartender, if you serve someone that is drunk and everything and they go out, they can come after you, even though you had nothing to do with it because you let somebody go or did something that could hurt somebody in the public or themselves.
Yeah,
so, I think...
And that's not always true. I mean, they call those dram shop statutes. It's something historical name, but the dram shop statutes, depending on the state you're in, they almost have to have some level of culpability. Like, you knew he was too drunk and he was leaving with car keys in his hand and you did nothing. I mean, it's not a shoe-in, but yeah, you're right.
Well, that's the same way with these prosecutors and everything, letting these criminals go, especially the ones who have committed numerous crimes and they're going to commit it again and stuff, where that it's a danger to the public to release them. So I think people need to raise up and come after these people and everything criminally and civilly, I believe. I think they should start having to pay a price.
Yeah, and here's the thing. When you have legislators that change the law and make them soft, the DA has no discretion left. It's soft. I can't prosecute for what's not a crime. You know what I'm saying? But then if the DA himself says, I refuse to prosecute those crimes, then that's a different story. And I think that is an abuse of discretion. But hey, Jeff, I got another caller hanging online, brother. Let me go see what they got. All right.
Have a good one, bud.
All right. See you, buddy. Sparky from Harvest. How you doing, bud?
Hey, good show, Phil and Boomer.
Yep. Thanks, man.
One thing I think anybody with common sense has been able to see through the liberal socialists who run these crime-ridden cities, they'll never come out and say what they're doing, but what they're doing with, for instance, a lot of the cities where the majority of blacks and minorities is, this is a soft form of reparations, and therefore we're going to get your votes because we're going to insult you to your face and say, well, you commit most of the crimes, but we want your vote, so we're going to go easy on your the criminality of what you're up to. We're going to not charge you any bail every time you're arrested, and just please show up at the polls and vote Democrat. It's like so many other Democrat socialist notions. It's unsustainable because there's a direct and mathematical correlation between rise in lawlessness and crime and the loss of business revenue and businesses shuttering and going away.
Yeah.
How in the world these people think they're educated elites but can't see that and continue to engage in conduct and laws and practices that are destroying their cities. It's unbelievable to me.
It is, and I tell you what, it's also unbelievable that they choose to ignore the success stories and they vilify those who preside over the success stories. Look at Giuliani. Giuliani went in and New York was a cesspool. And he came in as a former prosecutor, and he put in place certain things, not the least of which was the broken windows policy. And Times Square was just like, it was a triple X-rated place where you didn't go at night. And he cleaned it all up and turned it back into the crossroads of the world, and tourism went through the roof, and people prospered, and businesses came back to downtown. And yet the next opportunity for liberals to dismantle what he did and call him a villain, they did it. And it's just, it's unbelievable. You're right. They ignore what's you know, effective, and they totally ignore when someone was successful at being effective.
Yeah. Well, there's a long game in there, but I'm not perceiving what it is. You know, for instance, the open borders. Biden's people won't say, we want wide open borders. Of course they do, because they intend to make lawful citizens out of millions of illegals, with the expectation that they'll all vote Democrat. And that's as clear as the nose on your face, that nobody ever says that out loud. But the soft bigotry of low expectations, yeah, this business with the criminality, unbelievable to me. Yeah. I just, it's so intellectually dishonest.
It absolutely is, man. It is. And is it sad? And that's why we're losing some of our finest cities. They're just giving them away. All right. Hey, Spark, appreciate you, man, as always.
Thank you, man.
All right, see you. Hey, let me get a few text messages for the top of the hour. We're going to come back, by the way, and we're going to kick off Adventures in Woke World coming up next. I read Boomer a headline for the first story on Adventures in Woke World, and even he was sort of taken aback. Just, I don't know why I said even he, like maybe if it offends Boomer, it'll offend anybody. But let me get a few text messages real quick. David from Huntsville. Phil, you need to listen to audio of the crowd-controlled police officer and the judge in response to his words. Where are we talking about? I don't know where the crowd control is that he's talking about, but anyway, all right, good enough. John C. from Madison. My wife's uncle was in the National Guard during the Phoenix City Uprising, so he got to spend some time there, 1954. Yeah, John C., how about that? History. Thomas from Athens says, more on Phoenix City mob. Having been run out of Alabama, some of them joined the state line mob, moving their operations to McNary County, Tennessee, a model for Sheriff Buford Pusser in Walking Tall in 1973. Mob survived whether in Alabama, Tennessee, Chicago, or San Francisco. How about that? I did not realize that that's where the Walking Tall story may have moved from here to there. Steve from Huntsville says, have you seen the videos from New York City with immigrants attacking police? I have not seen that, but I am not surprised. Ben from Decatur, regarding Chicago, lived there 25 years, left in 2013 for Alabama, not moving back. Crime now is like a free pass to lawlessness. Said the last mayor passed a city law that no jail time unless $1,500 worth of stuff had been stolen. The kicker, no limit or each its own offense. Wow, that's amazing. Dan from Madison sent me a YouTube link. Can't get to it, brother, but I know what it is. He goes, Paul Harvey's If I Were the Devil from 1965. So if you haven't heard it before, it's one of the gems. I have heard it, man, and you're right. It is absolutely spot on. Paul Harvey was like a prophet. What else I got here? Brian from Huntsville. Robert Anson Heinlein's book, Starship Troopers, not the movie, explains Spare the Rod very well. Yes, it does. The book was way better than the movie. The movie was like Beverly Hills 90210 does bugs in space. It was weird. Josh from Moulton. Liberal mayors are insane. Try that in a small town. There you go, number one song in the nation. All right, listen, we got plenty more where that came from. We're coming right back with Adventures in Woke World. Y'all stay tuned. It's a good one.